there are connections and there are things that make sense to put together, and there's just so much music to comprehend now. We've had centuries and centuries of influences now, and there's always ways to find ways to connect the ideas.
Jazz pianist and composer Gene Kniffic, along with bassist Jeff Saunders and drummer Evan Hyde, are my guests tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It. The son of two university music professors, Gene Kniffic recently returned to his Kalamazoo hometown after 4 years at the University of Miami. He was welcomed back with a spot on the Fontana Summer Festival, showcasing his innovative arrangements and originals that draw from many musical worlds. I'm Kara Lawrence in the Takeda studio with the Gene Kniffic Trio. Stay with us. Guys, thanks so much for coming into WMUK for this session.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Tell me about putting this trio together and what fires the group.
I've been playing with Evan for about 5 years now. We met when Evan was going to Western Michigan University, and I was taking some classes there when I was in high school and playing around. And at that time in Kalamazoo, you know, we really like all this kind of music that's not so much in the traditional jazz vein, like the Bad Plus, Avishai Cohen, especially. And we want to play some music like that, some kind of adventurous, more through composed music. That kind of planted the seed for playing adventurous kind of modern jazz repertoire. And then I went to Miami and, you know, we didn't play as much. And then Evan told me he's going to come down for a master's degree there. So I thought, you know, we have to get something going, and it's my senior year, and I want to have a band together. So my first thought was to call Jeff to play with us, and we talked, and, you know, what kind of music are we going to approach, and you know, we had all these different ideas for things we could do since we had time there in school to dig through harder repertoire.
Evan, do you have any thoughts on how you guys met at Western and reconnected?
Well, I think when we were at Western, I mean, Gene was still in high school, you know, while I was working on my undergraduate degree. And I think we must have had some class. I think we had composition class together. And Gene was kind of doing the dual enrollment thing. He was taking a lot of music classes at the university with some of my classmates who were in my year coming in. And at some point, yeah, we just got to talk, you know, started talking and connected on some similar musical interests that we had. And been really lucky that even after Gene left for Miami, we've been able to, you know, we were able to, you know, keep that musical relationship happening. Him being from Kalamazoo, you know, he would come back and we would play, you know, whenever he was in town and do some gigs. And it just happened that it worked out for me to work on my graduate degree down in Miami during his senior year, which is really exciting. So it kind of was written in the stars, I think.
Here's where I want to ask Jeff about the musical scene in Miami and what attracted you. You graduated from the Eastman School of Music.
I think, especially in the school environment at the Frost School of Music, there's kind of this, there was a breath of fresh air that there was places to go and, you know, you can actually make a career in music. And so doing anything that you love to do. And so, you know, there's a very eclectic vibe there where people are trying to do their own thing, but do it very well. And so it's pretty supportive creatively. And so I think that kind of goes in with some of the repertoire that we've chosen, you know, trying to take some classical pieces and convert them into jazz type tunes and some of the more, you know, pop singer-songwriter covers. I think there's just a attitude of, you know, go for it down there that I was pretty attracted to. And it's such a diverse city. There's so many different things going on that, but they're all very deep. And so it's not like there's a lot of people doing a lot of things on the surface level. There's a lot of people doing something that they really believe in a very deep way, I think.
Does the community also include, you know, places to play and people who come out and kind of get into the different flavors you guys are into?
Yeah, there's a few different clubs. When you think of Miami, you probably think of club dance music, but there are some really cool clubs that like to have, you know, quality jazz and live music. But I think as far as our band, we've really been supported by the school community, and there's a lot of opportunities to play within the school for students, for, you know, because the School of Music is connected to the larger university, so there's a whole fan base right there.
I understand that you have an association with Terrence Blanchard.
Yeah, Evan and I actually play together in the Terrence Blanchard Ensemble, and that's been a really cool experience because he comes down maybe once a month for about a week and works with our ensemble. He kicks our butt, you know, trying to get us out of cliches and habits that, you know, maybe the intention of jazz education is to free you and be able to express yourself, but sometimes you can get kind of boxed in a little bit, and Terrence is on a mission to really change that.
Working with Terrence, or getting the opportunity to work with Terrence at the University of Miami, was one of the main reasons I chose to go down there to study. I was really lucky, just the timing of it, that the Henry Mancini Institute was looking for a graduate student drummer to play in this ensemble that Terrence is coaching for 2 years. Jeff and I played in it last year, and then the same group is going to be in it again this coming year. So it's been such a great experience, you know, being able to work with these guys and cultivate a sound and a vibe and work on, you know, compositional techniques as well as improvisational techniques. You know, Terrence is great with teaching us to kind of let go of those things that we have worked on for so long and kind of be in the moment of, you know, whatever you're doing musically, which has been, it's very frustrating at first, but the results have been, you know, amazing with all of us. So I feel really blessed to be a part of this program.
And I haven't had as much experience with him as these guys over here, but I've taken a few lessons with him, and he's such a versatile person, you know, as an amazing trumpet player and composer. You know, it's very rare that you'll sit down in a lesson with a jazz musician and he'll look at something you've written and he'll be like, you would help listen to these Bartok string quartets, because check out the way he manipulates this motive and this scherzo. And it's like, what, you know?
Wow.
He knows a very large repertoire of music and executes on a high level of efficiency. He's just constantly producing and just a very high level of quality. It's just a very prolific human being.
Sounds like just a fundamental experience to being down there. Mm-hmm. You know, he must have an extraordinary set of ears on him to pick up on if you play something twice the same way, he'll stop, he'll
right,
yep. stop you. Wow. So since you guys are here in the studio today, I wonder if you might treat us to a few tunes. And first up, we have a piece originally for solo piano by Maurice Ravel.
Yeah, I've had this idea of bringing a few classical pieces to the group. I'm primarily a jazz pianist, but I've always studied classical music. And, you know, I don't get so many chances to do classical recitals or performances, you know, of solo piano music. So my outlet of playing this music that I love a lot is, you know, bringing it to a trio and being able to play it with them. And in addition to that, the pieces we've chosen for, you know, to play as a trio, have a lot of connections to the jazz world, specifically this Ravel piece, the first movement of the Sonatine. Jazz music in the last, I would say, 50, 60, 70 years owes a lot to the harmony that Ravel and Debussy and those impressionistic composers explored. So it's kind of digging back into the history of jazz in addition to exploring the classics.
And we know that Ravel, when he met George Gershwin, he said, listen, you just do your thing. He loved American jazz too. Yeah. So it was definitely a meeting of equals there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Jazz came to Europe with World War One, with soldiers' bands, and it just kind of was a massive spread disease infection that just, especially in Paris, with the kind of like hot jazz Dixieland scene, just exploded in the early 20th century, and just, you know, most composers who were younger in France and Paris specifically at the time, like, really dug into that and you know, were going to clubs and listening to that music and trying to figure out a way to incorporate it into their own music.
Well, the Sonatine is classic Ravel. It has this texture, piano texture, that he could always play with. And, mm-hmm. of course, the harmonies are exquisite. Mm-hmm. So let's see what you do with it.
All right.
here in the studio at WMUK, we were listening to the Gene Kinnifick Trio with a piece by Maurice Ravel you might recognize as a solo piano piece in the classical literature. Gene and Evan and Jeff, what a beautiful arrangement. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You really didn't water down any of those themes. I mean, the full piece is there. I can hear the original in your arrangement. So you didn't take any shortcuts that I could hear.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of methods in how to take a classical piece and bring it to a jazz group. It's definitely been done before. We're certainly not the first. But a lot of times, people who approach that kind of crossover lose, you know, some of the main aspects. You know, they'll see the piece as a set of chord changes. Somebody who's really great at this type of thing is Jason Moran, who recorded a famous Brahms piece, Intermezzo, and did a somewhat similar treatment. But with this group, I basically play note for note what's written, and then because it's the form of the piece is set up like jazz, it's a sonata form. There's an exposition, a development, and a recap, and the development is so much like a solo section, you know, in a jazz piece. So instead of just playing the development, we start the development and then go into a pretty much completely improvised section. All we have is the little bass line that's written out in the piece as kind of a starting point, and then we go wherever. And we've talked a lot about just, you know, staying true to the themes of the piece and making sure we're using that material as opposed to just plugging in whatever jazz, whatever improvised, you know.
Terrence wouldn't like that at all.
Exactly.
No, I did hear the references. Jeff, people couldn't, of course, can't see you playing, but I can say that, you know, you were moving a lot, like dancing with the bass.
It's funny you say that, because I call her my favorite dancing partner. So when I'm on stage and playing and see all the people dancing, I look down and I got you, babe.
Very good. Evan, you, near the end of that piece, and I don't know if you do this every time, but there you almost put a backbeat on on getting us to the finale or getting us to this coda recap.
Yeah, well, I mean, learning this kind of repertoire, you know, in this setting has been a real interesting challenge for me as a drummer, you know, trying to figure out what my role is, you know, in this piece and how I can play in a way that supports, you know, melodically what's happening and thematically what's going on, you know, through the composition. And I've had to think a lot more like an orchestral percussionist. Never actually wrote a part out for this, but I kind of figured it out just by really learning the music and just kind of following the nuances, you know, of the composition.
Here's something I meant to observe earlier. The act of memorizing this, it goes so far beyond the 12-bar blues.
Yeah.
Your brains are really activating some major areas here.
It's definitely more challenging in that way, because I think there's a spectrum of how much is composed and how much is improvised, and it's everything from through composed to free jazz, you know, and this music probably falls closer to the center or maybe more so on the composed side. But I'd like it to, my conception is I would like it to be flexible, you know, still within it being through composed. It's still a little different each time in the melody and definitely very different each time in the improvisation.
Okay, well, tell me about the first time you heard Terry Riley's In C.
Well, you know, I've never heard it performed live before. That realm of music is something I'm not super familiar with, but would like to be. And I've, you know, I've studied a little bit of it. I took a class on the subject in music, you know, around that era. there's a group of composers that became known as the minimalist composers. And they were sort of known as the downtown composers in New York, as opposed to the uptown, you know, schools, the Juilliard and the those, you know, academic schools of thought. And they wanted their processes of composition very evident in the composition. So what that means is the idea, you get the idea when you hear it, you know, very clearly. So one of the ideas is to have a short kind of phrase and loop it for a really, really long time. So I thought, you know, why don't I take that idea and apply it to a blues? You know, I wanted to be able to play a blues with this group that's not one of the standard blues heads, or not to write something that sounds like this is going to be jazz. Like, you know, here's a blues, because, you know, that's kind of an older idea, I think. Basically, I have this piece that's this repeated figure that goes over the form of the blues, but it's super, you don't hear it because it's just kind of a polyrhythm texture. And then out of nowhere, it just turns into jazz.
I'd love to know, like, when Gene brings in an idea, do you all discuss it first, or does you start playing right away, or does he bring a chart?
This particular piece, we've only been performing this piece for, you know, maybe about a month or so. And I remember when Gene first brought it in, I had no idea that it was a blues at the beginning because of all this, you know, really interesting, you know, hemiola polyrhythms, you know, that were happening at the beginning. And it kind of took me a minute to hear, you know, the underlying form in the composition. But once we started playing it and getting more comfortable with it, it is probably one of my favorite pieces that we play now. And I'm hoping that we can keep exploring the possibilities with this particular piece. Every time we play it, it's so different, and that's really exciting.
Well, let's say we stop talking and let the music do the talking.
All right. Thank you.
We heard the Gene Kinnifick Trio once again here in WMUK's Yoshimi Takeda Performance Studio. What a fascinating romp there through minimalism and blues. And Gene, what a fun idea to take this minimalist concept. Was this piece inspired by or written by Terry Riley?
It doesn't have anything to do specifically with the composer. It's more... Terry Riley wrote a piece called In C, and it's kind of along with that, like, commentary on jazz and how that's worked before. The name's another pun. It's called In F, like blues in F, you know.
It's funny. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but it kind of comes around, you know, full circle, because like early blues, you know, if you listen to like, not even that early, but, you know, guys like John Lee Hooker or Howlin' Wolf, they're jamming on one chord for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so, and sometimes, in essence, that's minimalist music, sure. You know? And yeah. So it's like you're taking a blues, which is kind of a jazz form, I guess, but originally kind of more of a just blues or a folk form. And,
yeah.
And, you know, seeing how minimalist... composition styles can influence that, but then also kind of, I think even from the beginning of blues, it was just, you know,
yeah,
just jamming out on one chord.
definitely interested in kind of connecting dots between styles and all of this stuff, because, you know, there are connections and there are things that make sense to put together, and there's just so much music to comprehend now. We've had centuries and centuries of influences now, and there's always ways to find ways to connect the ideas.
Yeah, and now about 120 years of recorded music to go back to. Jeff, I never asked you where you grew up.
Oh, I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut. And I, like Gene, and like Evan, we all kind of grew up with musical parents and had musical siblings. So, that's kind of where I came from and started playing bass in middle school there, because I played cello, but then kids wanted to start a rock band. And so then I was, you know, got an electric bass and I could play in the jazz band. I could play in the orchestra. I can play in, you know, a rock band and
jazz
anything.
Musicians are so greedy.
So the bass, you know, took me places that I didn't expect, and just a lot of diverse experiences.
I thought it was really cool in the middle of the improvisation section there, where you started like strumming your solo. That was really cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I was telling Gene earlier. At first, I was thinking, okay, maybe I can play this whole solo on one note and, really, really go into that minimalist thing. But I got a little scared and started doing some other things. But jazz is scary. You know. No,
it was a great ride.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was fun.
Well, you guys have been so generous with your music and your time here today. I'm really looking forward to this last number that's going to take us to the end of our time here. It's such a sentimental is not quite the word. It's got some just really beautiful, comforting kind of chords and a tune. And I love anything that's in 6/8 or 3/4 or whatever you're playing. It always makes me feel nostalgic somehow. So tell me about Romulus.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it on the head, nail on the head with sentimental. It comes from a really wonderful artist named Sufjan Stevens. And he recorded a whole album based on cities and experiences in the state of Michigan. And I believe he's from Romulus. I could be wrong on that. But the song appears to be about his experience with his mother. The words are all just these very specific details about, like, kind of memories and things that made, like, big impacts. So I thought it would be a great thing to include in the repertoire, just because I'm a huge proponent of Michigan arts and Michigan artists. And it's just such a beautiful Michigan anthem for kind of people our age.
That's so lovely. Well, while we're feeling nostalgic and before we finish this hour, I wondered if there's anyone out there you'd like to acknowledge for where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, big thanks to David Baldwin and Fontana for bringing us up here. Had a wonderful concert here this summer, 2014, July. And we're really thankful to be welcomed into Kalamazoo. Really big thanks for my family for making this possible. And
yeah, I got to give a big shout out to Mr. Tom Kanific, Gene's dad, who's really helped me, you know, get a great bass to play. I flew up here from Miami and they put me up in their house and his mom, Renata, and fed me great food. And, you know, I really, 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 really appreciate what they've done.
Yeah. And thanks to this city, Kalamazoo, for being so supportive of me and this band and this music. It's been a really warm welcome back moving here.
Anything from you, Evan?
It's just great to be back in Michigan, you know, to perform, you know, kind of my old stomping grounds, you know, and you know, any chance I get to work with Gene or with Tom Kanific, you know, it's always such a pleasure. And Tom has done so much for me over the years. And Western and Kalamazoo has such a great community that's so supportive of the arts. And I feel really blessed to have been a part of that over the past few years. And I hope to keep coming back.
Well, we hope you do too. You guys gave us some amazing musical journeys today. And I really can't wait to keep following where you go. Thank you all very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We heard the Gene Kinific Trio. Gene Kinific, piano, Jeff Saunders on bass, and drummer Evan Hyde with a tune by Sufjan Stevens called Romulus, recorded in the WMUK Takeda Performance Studio by audio engineer Martin Clem. For more information on Gene Kinific and the trio, you can visit his website, genekinific.com. That's GeneKnific.com. If you'd like to revisit this hour with the Gene Kinific Trio, you can find it online at wmuk.org. Thanks once again to Gene, Jeff, and Evan for their musicianship and their stories, keeping us company here tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for tuning in.